was in the bullet. Lord judgment, my own sweet time. Did it teach what I found? Only recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast of my show, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, just like every other week, Shane Told. So good to have you on this fine Wednesday morning. The podcast came out a little late. What do you want from me? I'm on tour right now with my band Silverstein. I'm recording this from beautiful Calgary, Alberta, where the Calgary Stampede is in full effect. There are cowboys running all around the bus. It is really quite weird. And just a little bit of advice. Don't ask a cowboy where you can find some vegan food. They'll be very, very confused. But yes, I'm on tour with my band Silverstein, on tour with August Burns Red. It is a great tour. Go get tickets. Come hang out. Come say hi. People come and say hi to me every day, and they tell me how much they love this show, which is why I do it. Well, one of the reasons anyways. But I hope you enjoy it. And this week, we've got something very special. Former My Chemical Romance guitar player, now turned frontman for his own solo career, Frank Iero is on the program. It was very nice of him to take the time on a show day in New Jersey to get on the phone, give me a call right before Warped Tour. And what a guy, and what honesty comes through in this pretty incredible episode. So sit back, enjoy, and take a listen. Before we get into that, hey, you can always get in touch with me very easily. Email is the best method. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. Add me on the social medias too, Instagram and all that stuff. I got a pretty pissed off message on Instagram saying, it looks like you don't really answer your fans. Well, that's because you sent me a message on Instagram and I don't really look at that. So send me an email and I will respond. So yes, LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. Hit me up. If you like the show, feel free to write a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. Tell a friend, tell a loved one. Let's keep this thing spreading. And, you know, you can go back and listen to all 180-something episodes that I have. Go back. There's lots of good ones way back in the past. So go ahead. Listen to this one, then just work your way backwards. I think that that is the way to do it. And once you've done that, and you've listened to all the episodes, and it's still not enough, and you want more, well, I have an option for you as well. It's called the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, and it is the reason that this show keeps going week after week. It keeps growing because we have an amazing community of over 350 people from all over the world that are pledging to keep this thing going for as little as $6 a month. And you get a whole bunch of stuff. You get bonus episodes, interaction with me, interaction with fans of the show. I do a question and answer session every month. You get access to Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise. You get free merchandise shipped to your house. And did I mention bonus content? I know I did, but I'm mentioning it again. There is some great stuff there, including a lot of podcasts I do with non-lead singers. So head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. That will give you all the information, and hopefully you sign up, and then, you'll be in. It's going to be great. leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Anyway, we'll keep the intro short, and we'll get right into it with my conversation with Frank Iero. Hey, Frank.
Yes.
Hey, man, it's Shane with Lead Singer Syndrome.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, I'm fantastic. How are you?
Good.
Good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. I know you got a show tonight.
Yeah, we actually just pulled in. We just loaded.
Okay, cool. Yeah. You good to do this, or you need a minute?
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, awesome. Cool, man. Yeah, so it's at Asbury Lanes, correct?
Correct.
That's cool. Yeah.
Have you played there recently? I know they've done like a whole revamp. It's like a whole new thing.
No, I know. It's beautiful. And yeah. This is the first time I've been here since that. I played here years ago with a band. Actually, I did a band called Love Cast. It was like a Cure cover band, like me, some guys from the Souls. It was me, Pete, DJ from Let It Burn did it. Matt from Seaside Caves was in it, and it was really fun. But like we played there, and I remember like that was the night too that the AC had gone out.
Oh, okay.
So it was pretty rough. It was a brutal one.
I've heard. Yeah, I never went to the old one. My band just played there a few months ago actually, and it was great.
Nice.
And I'm an avid bowler, so to be able to play some, you know. Play some free bowling before the show. That was great.
Right.
I loved it.
That rules.
And I believe they have the Impossible Burger as well.
That's what I heard. Yeah, I'm excited for that.
There you go. Yeah, it should be a great night. And it's a warm-up for Big Warped Tour show this weekend as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be fun, right?
It is. I hope so.
How long has it been since you
played a Warped Tour show?
I mean, either played or went to one or anything like that.
Well, definitely the last one I went to was the last one I played.
Right, okay.
That had to be... It was another anniversary, and I believe it was at Jones Beach.
Yep.
And it was like... I mean, hell, it might have been the 15-year anniversary. It might have been like 10 years ago.
That's probably right, man. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I think I remember, was that the one they had, like the ad mat had like a skateboard, but it looked like a birthday cake?
Maybe something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I
think, exactly,
I think that's what it was, because I think my band played on that one as well.
On the ship. I remember H2O did it.
Yeah.
So we have to hang out with Rusty. And, of course, now H2O is playing tonight in Asbury, and they're playing on Sunday with us at Warp, so I'm excited.
Yeah, what a lineup. It's like crazy. I was looking at it, and Silverstein, we're playing the West Coast version.
And oh, cool.
We get Jawbreaker. We get Jawbreaker, so that's... Oh, you're playing there too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I'm excited for Jawbreaker.
I don't know what day, though, we're playing yet.
Okay. Yeah, they're I think they're intentionally a little bit vague. Mm-hmm. They want people to buy tickets for both shows, which I don't blame them, you know? It's not easy selling tickets these days.
I hear you. But tell me. You know what I mean? Like tell the bands.
Right.
so you can plan ahead a little bit.
I definitely with you on that one, man. So you know, going back to this, and I know you're not there yet. You're not on the Warped Tour ground, so this would be a better suited question in a couple days. But, you know, do you think it's going to bring back all those memories of, you know, 04, 05, especially 05, I guess, when you know, when MyChem was really blowing up that summer? Is that a feeling you're excited to feel again? Or do you think it's just so far removed that it's just not going to be like that?
Well, no, I mean, you know, I'm sure it's going to be very nostalgic and reminiscent of you know, playing those parking lots. I mean, that was so much fun. I don't think I have a negative memory about any of those shows.
Right.
You know? And then the thing that shell shocked you was like, you know, showering out of a bag and, you know, waiting in line for Hanson Soda. Like, that was the stuff that, you know, that's the only stuff you don't look like fondly upon. Like, everything else was, it was so much fun. You know, it was just, you know, you were younger and you could do all that stuff. Like, you could go through it like that, you know?
Absolutely.
It was definitely like a punk rock summer camp. So I'm looking forward to that again. But it's a different band. So I don't know. I mean,
sure.
You know, house, like what the similarities are going to be. But it's funny, man. Like those, like there's certain memories that I have, like, you know, playing, oh God, like a parking lot somewhere in like Denver or something like that. And all of a sudden, like looking out over this crowd and bouncing along is Matt Stebo with like a cocktail in his hand and just and, like hogoing through this crowd and just being like, oh my God, like this is amazing.
I know.
You know? And becoming friends with people that, you know, you were just fans of. And slowly but surely, you know, becoming their peers and now you get to play together again. It's gonna be fun.
No, absolutely, man. It really is. And that is the amazing thing about Warped Tour is, you know, bands from so many different walks of life, you know, within, you know, the punk community. And you know, I know you have a wide range of influences and bands that you like, and they don't all make sense to go on tour with either your solo stuff or My Chemical Romance and stuff. So finally it's like, oh shit, you know, like I'm a huge NoFX fan, you know, so to be able to make friends and play poker with Fat Mike on that tour, or, you know, mm-hmm. those kinds of things, like, that isn't always an opportunity you're going to get just doing, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 band bill packages with, you know,
right.
bands that are, you know, obviously aligned with you, you know? So, right. So that I love that aspect of Warped Tour. And I think that's still going to be there. The essence of that will still be there this weekend.
I hope so. You know?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. I that was the stuff that, you know, you'll never forget, like the after hours stuff, the debauchery that happened backstage, and like the camaraderie that happened. You know what I mean? It was like, it was like getting to see behind this curtain.
Oh, totally.
You know, and being accepted into this world that you wanted so badly to be a part of, or that you had only heard about, or, you know, it's the stuff of, you know, the myth and legend. You know what I mean?
One myth and legend that I heard was back in 2005. You guys used to practice in the back of a truck. Is that true?
That's true.
You used to set up your gear and actually practice on the Warped Tour? That's crazy.
Yeah. We figured out that we could, I forget what we did to get the funds to fund it, but we wanted to write a record. Oh, that's what we did. We were writing a record.
Okay.
And we took advance money to rent a bus for that tour so that we could gut it, and we set up a studio in the back.
Okay.
So every day we had like stations. It was like, you know, like we only had a couple of bunks on it because we gutted the whole thing. And we had a drum set up and recording mechanism, and we practiced every day and we wrote every day.
Awesome.
Like, it was nonstop. It was like, you know, like boot camp. Like, we were maniacs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good word for it. It was like you were a very intense group. You could tell it was like you really had your game faces on every day, where a lot of bands were, you know, fucking around and, like you say, the behind the scene debauchery. That was like definitely going on,
right.
Always as on Warped Tour, but I think that was like at its peak. But yeah, you guys seemed like, you know, I remember you guys and Fall Out Boy were both like just massive, like blowing up, and it was like every day you guys were just like right there, you know, trying to take over the world.
Well, I think it was just like we were just so driven to, you know, to hone it and to make sure that we were the best that we could possibly be. Like, you know, you have this, you know what this is like. You go out there and you have this mentality. It's not like it's a competition thing, but like you're up there to kill everyone you see. You know what I mean? Like, you want to lay waste to the entire fucking world and watch it burn. And the only way to do that is to be the best, you know, you could possibly ever be. And so we took it very, very, very seriously. Like, and here's the thing too. I think also too, it was ultimately like the downfall, because like we just burned ourselves out so hard.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there was no room for, you know, less than perfection on things. And, you know, like you trained and you wrote and you everything was so like regimented and serious that sometimes you forgot to have fun, but you had fun in the work. You know what I mean? And the pressure, I think, you know, eventually got to us and made it, we all cracked at one point. You know, it just didn't all happen at once for everybody. But like, you know, it was fucking crazy. Like we were just, you know, that was part of the addiction too. Like, you know, all of us are addicts in our own right, and I think that played into that. You know,
yeah,
we were
absolutely.
Just addicted to the music and to the project.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, I mean, you went through so many eras in such a short time as a band, you know, constantly reinventing yourselves and really doing it in a way that was creative and, you know, new every time. It must have just been exhausting.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's like, you know, I just think of a band that, I just even like little things like, okay, this is a new tour. We got to like figure out what we're going to wear on this tour, or we're going to figure out, like, you know, I mean, the set list to a lesser extent, but just all those little tiny things that, like, a punk band isn't supposed to worry about. But you put yourselves on a pedestal where you had to be the best, and you were the best, and it was too much. It was just too much to maintain, I guess, right?
Well, I don't think. I mean, you know, every candle's going to burn out at some time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking back, and, you know, it's become, the band has become, and I want to talk about your solo stuff and everything else too. We're going to get there. But while we're on this topic, you know, it's kind of amazing now that it's been so many years since the band broke up, how the younger people have discovered it, how you guys have become legends, you know, in a weird way, to where your music has actually gotten more popular since you broke up.
Isn't that weird?
Do you realize that? I mean, you're on the inside, you know, of it. But no. I find it really crazy when somebody that's, you know, a little bit younger, because I think we're the same age. I'm 38.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that's a little bit younger is like, oh, my favorite band is My Chemical Romance, but they broke up before I, you know, got a chance to see them.
Isn't that crazy?
It's like...
Well, I think also, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where, like, some of my favorite, like, that's how I found out about some, you know, like, I was born in 81, right? So
yep,
I found out about the Misfits, and they were long fucking gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, or, like, Black Flag and, you know, Minor Threat and things of that nature. Like, sure. You know, Gorilla Biscuits, too. Like, it was, like, shit, you know? Now I'm finally in the know with this music, and I can't go see it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's crazy to be that for someone else. But, you know, I guess I accrue it to, like, you know, when I was young, I found out about bands that I loved through, like, older siblings and, you know, like really good friends, like older brothers and sisters or like, you know, like when I went into high school, like the older kids were the only ones that played music. So I was a freshman and I joined bands with seniors. And so, like, they would make me mixtapes, and it was like, you know, I learned about it through that, like, older generation. And then it still felt like I had discovered it. You know what I mean? Like, I had this ownership over it because nobody else my age was listening to it. And it's cool. Like, but I don't know how it's happening, you know, for all these young people. Like, you know, I'm playing shows on my own, on solo things, and people are, you know, like, the crowds are getting younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's young kids, like, you know, that are coming to shows and they have My Chem shirts on and they're just finding out about it. And it's like, wow, that's amazing. Like, I love that, but I don't know how it's happening. You know, I think it's the same way that I learned about stuff. And if that's true, then that's amazing. Like, that stuff still exists.
I think it does still exist. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you know, there's obviously, like, still those things, like, where there's emo nights. And, you know, and it's like, My Chem is going to be the last song of the night. It's, you know, there's those kinds of events that happen that sort of just remind everybody, you know. But what I think is interesting, too, is, like, you know, the last record you put out and, you know, the record, I mean, you know, it wasn't your biggest record, of course. And it, I don't know if it ultimately led to your demise or not, but, you know, everyone talks about, oh, My Chem, when they come back, if they come back, it's going to be like stadiums, you know, it's going to be like this huge thing. Whereas, like, on your last couple tours, like, you know, the things were waning away. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, thing to see, I guess, now when it's, you know, people remember different parts of the band. You know, they remember the Black Parade days, and then they remember, you know, the I'm Not Okay or the Helena video, you know, and then they like to ignore those, the down moments of the band. I don't know. What's your take on that? Do you think about that stuff?
Not really. I mean, I think we just went through so many, you know, different worlds and incarnations.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, people have, like, it's funny. I think Danger Days is bigger now than it was when it came out.
And Definitely.
It's funny how, like, I feel like just, like, based on evidence that I've seen with, like, the kids coming to shows and their favorite, you know, like, not incarnation of the band, but I guess, like, time frame. Maybe it was just too ahead of its time.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But that's okay. I don't care.
No. I'm glad you don't. I mean, I love that. And your positivity just through this call, it's, I can tell that you seem very content and you seem very happy. It's not, it isn't something you can pretend, I don't think. Like, it's really radiating through.
Well, think about this, man. Like, what, you know, we get to write songs in our basement and play them for people.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Not bad.
You know, like yesterday, I had a day off and I was with my kids. And, you know, we hung out. We watched a movie at home. And then it was like, oh, you know, you guys are going to go to the beach. And I'm going to go put it down the street from where you are. You're hanging out and play a show. And then maybe I'll come and hang out and see you guys. And we'll get some ice cream. Like, that's fucking crazy. Yeah, I mean, that's a dream come true, man. Like, yeah, I have nothing to be upset about. No. Like, I got to do everything I've ever wanted to do. I'm still doing it. Like, fuck.
It's great, man.
It's nuts. It's nuts. I mean, that's not to say I don't have bad days and I don't get fucking frustrated.
Sure.
You know, any of that shit. You know, like, you know, some things don't go my way. You know, but for the most part, like, I'm doing all right. Like, yeah, I got nothing to be upset about.
I absolutely love that answer, man. Well, congrats on the new record. It's only been out for, what, about a month now? Barriers?
Yeah, I think we did 3 weeks.
And you know, the whole record, pretty much from what I've read about it, it stems from the accident that happened in Australia a few years back now, where lucky to be alive. I guess you don't know going into writing a record that's what is going to come out. But I guess that once you start writing, you realize your thoughts on that and how important that event was to you. I mean, you know, getting through it, or, you know, having more self-realization about your life, all that stuff. You know, it just all seems to come out.
Well, I think, yeah, you're right. But for this record, it was like, I'm sorry, I have a mouthful. I'm sorry, I'm trying to eat my lunch as I talk to you. I apologize.
Do your thing, man.
No, this was the first record that I wrote since that, you know, crazy experience.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And I knew that, like, there's no way you can write a record after, you know, being kind of having your life taken from you and everything that you love taken from you and not address that, you know? So that's, I think, why I put this record off for so long.
Right, of course.
And I took some time off. Like, you know, so here's the timeline. Basically, I write a record, I record it, put it out, and then, like, you know, 10 days before the record comes out, I get hit by a bus and I can't tour. So for 6 months, I'm laid up. You know, the month of that is in the hospital. I come home, I do physical therapy. Finally get out of it and, like, you know what, we're going to get on the road. We tour for 6 months and then I'm like, that's it. I need to take some time off. I can't do this anymore. So it took a year. And, you know, it was a year of not playing shows, basically, which is the longest I've ever gone since I started playing my first show at 13.
Yeah, wow.
So now I'm 38. I haven't played a show in a year, and I'm writing this record about this thing that, like, you know, almost, you know, took my life or at the very least took away the thing that I love doing the most.
Yeah.
And it was like, I have to address this thing, but everything I wrote just didn't seem like it encompassed all the feelings that I had about it. You know, like, when you have this, like, giant, you know, monumental fucking boulder dropped on you, like, you better say something really important, you know? Otherwise, you know, you can't just be like, oh, that was rough, and then go on to the next thing. Like, it doesn't work.
No.
So I put it off for a long time, and I just couldn't crack it. And I think what happened was I ended up getting calls from Tucker, Tucker Roll, of course, who plays in Thursday, plays drums in Future Violence. Matt Armstrong, who played in Murder by Death and plays bass in Future Violence. And, like, these are two dudes that I met, like, in 1999. You know, like, touring and, you know, being signed to Eyeball, like, you know, both those bands were on Eyeball. We shared a fucking practice studio, you know.
Yeah.
And I just always wanted to be in a band with them, like, and write music together. And I thought that we just had, like, you know, this kindred spirit type thing. And I liked the way that they wrote, like, thought about music. And the idea that they were both free and wanted to do a record, and that I couldn't do a record with them after waiting 20 years because I couldn't get over my bullshit, like, really bummed me out. I was like, how much am I going to let this fucking accident take from me, you know?
Yeah,
so I just started to write songs. And the more I wrote, I cracked the accent. And once I cracked the accent, I was like, oh, shit, like, everything else that I've ever shied away from, like, in my entire career, like, that doesn't seem as scary, you know? And so I just kept writing. And we filled the band out. Of course, my longtime collaborator now, but my brother-in-law, Evan Nestor, who plays guitar in the Future Islands, he was also in the Celebration and the Patience. Like, he was free to do the record. And then Kaylee Goldsworthy, who I met maybe three years ago, she was touring with Dave Haas, and we did a tour together, and I met her, and I was like, oh my God, like, this girl, like, she's, you know, this is like the final like brick, you know, that I've been searching for. And we started writing this record, and it was like, I knew exactly what it needed to sound like, I knew exactly where it needed to be recorded, and it just, like, my brain just, like, that was it. I just kept running. And we recorded it October, November of last year with Steve Albini in Chicago, and it just came out.
Oh, did you really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Steve Albini, for people that don't know, is a legendary producer, you know, probably most known for his work with Nirvana.
Pixies.
Pixies and Jawbreaker as well. But what was it like working with him? I mean,
he's amazing. I mean, that's the thing, is like, he's a genius, right? And he'll tell you, I mean, like, you know, he'll explain to you, I'm not a producer. I'm a sound engineer, you know, and he's really wonderful at capturing the way the band sounds, you know. If you have something in your head that you want to chase, he's so well versed in his craft that, you know, like, you don't even have to worry. And when you're in the studio, it's just him, like, making stuff. Like, there's no assistant, there's no anyone else. Like, maybe someone will get you coffee, but that's about it. Yeah, I mean, like, it's just you and Steve.
Well, I mean, so, you know, okay, I'll let you go. Go ahead.
It's funny, though. Like, you know, every recording experience I've ever had, there's been, like, you know, multiple people in the studio, like, doing stuff, you know, like, the producer doesn't ever, like, put the mic up or anything like that. Like, he just tells some wacky to fucking do it and shit like that. And then you never, you know, it's like magic that it's there. But, like, he's like, you know, he knows what the fuck he's doing. And knows that, like, you know, if he moves something in a quarter of an inch a certain way, like, you know, he's going to get a different tone. And he's just really great, and he's quick. So that's why we were able to do 17 songs in 15 days. That's recorded and mixed.
Wow.
And that's all recorded live 2-inch tape.
Oh, really? Wow. To tape as well. That's crazy.
That's one of those things where it's like, again, like, working at a maniac speed, like, in a whirlwind, I guess I still do that.
Well, I mean, recording to tape, and I'm old enough to remember recording to tape,
right?
And it's something that, like, kids can't even fathom. Like, I've even talked to producers that are younger than me about it, and it's like, you realize that once you do a take, you have to wait for the tape to rewind before you can record again, you know?
Yeah.
And it goes pretty quick, but it's still, like, there's still, like, this disconnect between, you know, the modern day and now, and the way that things are edited. Like, you can't really edit things the way, like, if that take was good, but the guitar, like, you know, you came in just a little bit, you can't just cut off, like, the top of it, right? It's really organic.
If you're making an edit, you're using a razor blade and tape and putting it together, and that might not work, and you might ruin everything. So you better do it right live. And that's what we did, man. We all got in a room together. And that's the first thing, too. Like, that's the first time with this project that I've ever had a full band that was, you know, that wrote and recorded, that wrote these songs, recording them live in a room, not separated. Like, we're bleeding into each other's mics.
Yeah,
we're in the room together, and you're playing off of one another, and that's why I think you get the sound of the record that you get. You know, like, you're hearing us be inspired on the spot by one another,
totally
in the room, and you can't fake that.
You can't fake that, and that's something I think. I remember I was over at my parents' house, and they were watching this, you know, late night music documentary, and it was about Simon and Garfunkel, you know, and I thought I knew a lot about Simon and Garfunkel, and I watched this, and it was like, blew my mind. But one thing that they talked about was when they tracked their vocals together, and obviously they're known for their harmonies, they actually did them into the same microphone.
Isn't that crazy?
Because if they did it on separate tracks, they couldn't get the same sound. It didn't work.
Right. Well, think about it, right? Like, your old blues recordings, like, and stuff like that. Like, these are just, like, a group of guys standing in the room around one mic. And when it's your turn to solo, you don't turn them up. You just get closer to the microphone.
Yeah.
Like, that's how that shit worked, you know?
I know.
And there's something so special about that. There's something so organic about that.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
It's true. When you have that one part in those old blues recordings when, like, you know, the guy just kind of tripped up a little bit and went way too close and the mic's like peaking, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like the whole recording pops, but it's so good.
You invented distortion. Basically is what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking special.
Yeah. That's really cool that you did that.
Thanks, man.
That's really cool that you did that. So I heard you're a big Mineral fan.
I am.
Like, a huge Mineral fan.
Yeah, I love that they're touring again.
And earlier when in the interview when you were talking about how you didn't get a chance to see or like, you know, Minor Threat or Gorilla Biscuits or whatever had broken up. Well, for me, Mineral was a band that I never got a chance to see because they broke up right after pretty much the second record.
Right.
I assume by now you've seen them.
Mm-hmm. I actually played with them at Groz Rock a couple years ago.
Cool.
And it was unreal. And the same show, that same festival, was like I'd gotten to see Refuse get back together. I got to see Knapsack play. Mineral. I was like, oh my god, like this. I checked off like four or five of my bucket list bands.
That's awesome. I haven't seen Knapsack come back.
That was great.
But oh man, yeah I love
those. It was really great
too. Wow, very cool, man. Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to pick your brain about that. Was there any you know, when you think about those old bands that I know some of them you didn't get into when they were current, you got into them later on,
right,
after you'd already kind of become, you know, a professional musician or whatever. Is there an element of when you work with Steve Albini and you're doing this live off the floor stuff, do you channel, you know, your inner Chris Simpson when you go for that vocal take? Do you know what I mean? Does that kind of come into your mind when it's like,
there's
like,
definitely stuff where you're chasing. Yeah.
This is the record. Use. Like, this is how records were made in 1997. You know, mm-hmm. like, I obviously that's more than 20 years ago and the technology's changed. But, you know, when you went back, were there moments on this record when you went, holy shit, like, I can't believe that we pulled that off, or I can't believe that that's me?
Yes. Absolutely. And I think that those moments happen too, like when you're like doing a song, say, like that's, you know, quote unquote out of your wheelhouse, like, you know,
yeah,
you know,
we
start the record with a song called New Day's Coming, and that's, you know, my take on like a 1960s soul, like Stax recording song, and that's something, you know, that like was instilled in me by my father, and, you know, just, you know, music that I love, like, you know, like one of my favorite recording artists of all time is Otis Redding, and like, you know, but to say like, oh, I'm gonna do this Otis Redding song, like, people think that's kind of fucking weird, and I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm just gonna fucking do it and see it, you know, see if it works, kind of thing. And I think we were able to, you know, put our own twist on things like that. And there's definitely, like, I mean, to go back to, like, you know, little things that you chase. Like, there's a moment in I think I've mentioned this to other people before, but there's a moment in that song Slower off of the Power of Family,
yes,
by Mineral, where everything kind of breaks down and it gets uncomfortably low for longer than you would expect it to get. And then all of a sudden this fucking feedback comes in and just shatters the glass, right?
Yes.
It's just like, it's the greatest moment. And at least in my mind, that ever happened on recorded view. It's like, it's just feedback. But it's beautiful. Like, the way that it just juxtaposes, like, with the section that you have. And there's a section on the last song on our record. It's called 24 Karat Lush. That's, you know, the idea that you're going for is like, let's bring it down to, you know, just to a whisper, because that's the most powerful thing you can do sometimes, is whisper, and then just kind of like come back in with like a wailing feedback to bring it all back in and bring the song back around. And again, you know, like, these are just little inspirations, like little tidbits of your youth where you're like, oh, that, I got that from this, or I got this from that, you know. And yeah, that's what we're always chasing, these things that that changed you, you know. Like, the moment I heard that song, I remember I was listening on like a Discman in a van somewhere.
and
being like, oh my god, like, no one, like, it felt like no one else had ever heard this, like, but my life was forever changed, you know what I mean?
I felt the same way, man. Like, you know, growing up on punk rock and stuff, and I think somebody made me a mixtape, and it definitely had Gloria on it, and I think Slower too. And yeah, it's just that part where, you know, I need this more than you will ever know. Like, that's just like the most, like, until that moment, I was like, okay, this is what they mean by emo. Now I get it. Yes. You know?
Well, that's the thing. When I first heard of, like, oh, they're having these things called emo night, I was like, oh, so they play, like, old J-Tree stuff? And be like, no. They play, like, you know.
My band.
Like, yeah. I'm like, that's really? It's like, there's no Cure? Like, they don't play the Cure? And they're like, no. And they're like, well, they titled that wrong. I would be super disappointed if I showed up and played a thing called Emo Night and they didn't play any emo songs.
I've done quite a few of, like, DJed a few of them. And I try to fit, you know, it's kind of like you got to play the hits for the people that are there, and I kind of get what it is now. But I try, like, you know, I did one in Omaha, and I'm like, I have to play Cursive or, like, something Saddle Creek, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I have to. So I did.
Why wouldn't you?
You know what I mean? But yeah,
was the crowd bummed?
Actually, they were stoked, actually. I think that enough people were knowledgeable that Omaha was an important, you know, instrumental place for that scene, you know.
You should have played Omaha by fucking Counting Crows, dude. That's a fucking emo song as fuck.
Yeah. Could have done that too.
Yeah.
That absolutely would have worked, man. Yeah, if anyone wants to hear Slower by Mineral ripped off, my band ripped it off on our first ever demo.
there you go.
In 2000, Forever in a Day. That is pretty much a straight ripoff of Slower by Mineral. But anyway, man. So I don't want to take a too much of your time. I know you have a show, but I got a whole bunch of fan questions.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, they're all pretty good, I think. So this one here, by Scott, I don't know how to say his last name, but it's not that important. Ponce de Leon, I think. I'm sure you've gotten all kinds of pronunciations on your last name.
Oh, God, yeah. I have too many vowels in my name for anybody to get it right.
he says, two questions. First, when My Chem came to an end, was the intention always to continue with another project, or were you not really sure what you were going to do, or looking for another role, such as a producer, etc.?
I never really wanted to produce, to be honest. I didn't know what to do, to be honest. I was like, oh, well, I did the music thing. Maybe I should try something else.
Was it pretty scary?
No. I think it's scary, but it's also, like, invigorating. You know, like, oh, my God, I don't know what to do. Like, this has, you know, been such a long part of my life for, like, you know, like 12 years. Like, you know, what do I do without this? And then you're like, oh, I could do anything without this. You know what I mean? So, like, you get, like, it's both. But I've just always written the song. So I just immediately, like, I was already doing a project at that time with James, my friend James Louise.
Yeah.
We were doing a band called Death Spells. And so, like, I kind of was busy, but, you know, like, so I was like, did that. I did a tour with that. And then James was like, oh, I'm going to do a Reggie tour. So you want to do that? Or do you want to, you know, just wait until I get back? And I was like, I don't know. I did a Reggie tour, like, in 2009. And I was like, that was really fun. But I kind of have these other songs I want to write. So I just decided to stay home and write songs. And that ended up being Stomach Aches. And then 2014, I was on tour.
Yeah,
so it was one of those things where it went so quick.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, you know, like, for 2 weeks, I was like, oh my God, what do I do? And then, like, three weeks in, I was like, oh, I guess I'm on tour.
Did you, when you played the last My Chemical Romance show, did you know that that was going to be the last show?
No.
Is there like a weird regret there? Like, does it feel unfinished?
Well, no, because I feel like, do you want to get, you know, shot in the face, or do you want to just get shot in the back of the head?
Wow.
Know what I mean? Like,
have you ever used that before? Because that is that is profound.
What do you think about it, right,
dude? It took me like a couple seconds, and then I was like, that is, oh my goodness, yeah. I mean, I had Ryan from Yellow Card, you know, the other day, and he's like, yeah, our last show, like, everyone's in the dressing room after crying. You know, like, can't believe it's over, and it had to end. But still, you know, you're right. It's that's wow, yeah. Wow. That that's incredible. all right, well, let's go on to the next fan question, if you don't mind. Here. And this is a pretty good one. It comes from Zach Weissenberger. He says, "How much lead singer experience did you really have before starting your current solo project? after playing in my camp for so long, did you find yourself emulating Gerard, or did you kind of have your own natural style?
Yeah, well, as far as like emulating Gio, I think that he's just so unique and such a like a natural talent that's kind of an impossibility.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there's nobody that sings like him. It's just unreal. And it was like one of those things where like I think going into it, like I had done other bands. I did like Leathermouth and I sang in that. Yep, and I did Pensy Prep. I sang in that. Death Spells I sang in. But like it was never like a full-time gig, so I didn't really, like, I don't know. I didn't have any respect for it. We'll say that. And then immediately, when I started to take it seriously, like, I did this project, and it was like, oh, wow, I'm being serious about this. I immediately was like, oh, my God, I was so wrong. I'm such an asshole. And then I called everyone that I was ever in a band with that sang and, like, apologized. You know what I mean? It's insane. It's like, you know, you have this instrument that you can't see, you have no idea how it works, and it's affected by everything around you, even though you have nothing to do with it. Like, oh, it was, you know, the air conditioner was on last night. Oh, okay, so your instrument is broken. Cool. Like, shit like that. And it's like, it's so frustrating, and it's the worst. But it's also the best. Like, when you get it right, it's the best.
That's so, you put that very eloquently. That's absolutely it's absolutely perfect.
But I've definitely, it's taken me a while, but I think over, you know, like the past, I don't know, what year is it now? 2019?
I forgot the other day, I didn't know.
Yeah. God. So I guess like over 5 years, like I said, like, if I'm going to be playing this instrument, I better learn how to use it, you know? So I started to like try to, you know, get some sort of insight on that, take lessons and things of that nature and try to get better at it. But what's up, man? Hold on one second, let me just put this kid.
Oh no, you're cool. I mean, I guess when you started going on tour and being the singer. Oh no, you're fine, man. When you started going on tour and being the singer, did you have trouble losing your voice?
Definitely. I still do.
Oh, you still do, yeah. Well, I know you've had a lot of history of you know, like the Stomach Aches title of the record.
Right,
you know, you're kind of known as a bit of a sick guy.
I get sick all the time. It's horrible.
Yeah, bad immune system.
I think that's the thing, though. Yeah, I think I have a terrible immune system, and like, you know, they say like, you know, your immune system stems from your gut, and my insides are just rotting away. So it's like, I think that's the issue. But I think also like the more you do it, the better you get at it. But then when I took that year off and not touring on it, getting back into it, now I'm slowly but surely getting back, but it's hard, you know. I mean, there's a learning curve there. So like, all right, you know, this, you haven't used this muscle like you know, like a professional in a long time, so you have to kind of get that back, you know. But I'll get there.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. All right, a couple more. We got one from Tanya Kopchewski from Frankfurt, Germany. So you know you're going to get the real, you know, the Germans. You're going to get the honesty right here. Actually, this is actually pretty chill. She asks you about, cool. And I know how you're going to have to answer this, but he's a big soccer fan, and the English FC Liverpool is his favorite team. But
oh, nice, good.
But what country do you root for in the World Cup?
Oh, I hear you. This year was rough. Like, you know, like everybody was kind of spread out. So I'd like to watch Firmino play for Brazil, and I was like, oh, like it'd be nice to see Egypt win. But I think, like, I don't know, man. I really liked Mexico this year. I thought they fucking played their hearts out. I don't have like a specific team that I root for in World Cup. I just like to see, you know, like people playing from their heart, and I like people playing like a team.
Right.
Like that's what I like to see. And it sounds like such a dad thing, but like I just get excited that people try.
Whatever team like, looks like they're having the most fun, I want them to win.
Yeah, kind of. Like I was like, you know what? Like this year, I was like, fuck France, man. Like they don't look like it looks like they're just, I don't know. I didn't get like a love for the game type vibe.
Right.
And it didn't. Yeah. I was not rooting for them. But hey, you know.
So there you go. I love that. I love the honesty of the answer. And
I
take a couple of different bandwagons. It's okay. It's like I remember in 1990. I think it was 1994. Jeez, I'm showing my age now. But when it was in USA and like Cameroon made like the top four, and everyone's like, Cameroon. I'm like, I've never even heard of this country. But yeah, I'm on board. This is great.
I hope. Yeah, I want people, like, I like underdog shit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I want someone to win that's like never won or like can't even afford uniforms. Like, that's who I want to win.
I love that, man. I love that. Cool. Well, I guess we did the thing. Anything else add?
I don't know. I don't think so. I had a great time, though. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you. And one last question, which I have to ask. So what's going on? Is My Chemical Romance coming back? 2020? What's going on?
Stop it. you don't have to ask that. Nobody has to ask that.
Well, maybe you have some more profound things to say about getting shot in the head or face. I'm not sure, but
all right, here's the thing. Would you rather get shot in the head once or twice? Right? Like, you want it to go happen again so that then we can fucking end it again?
Well, yeah, we can leave it at that if you'd like to, Frank. But regardless of what the future holds, I wish you all the best, and thanks for taking the time. Have a great show tonight. Have a great show at Warped Tour and everything else.
Pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
All right, man.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, see ya. Bye. So there it is with Frank, and what a great conversation. I really do appreciate him taking time out of his show day to speak with me, and I bet Warped Tour went so well for him. I saw the pictures. It looked absolutely crazy. I can't wait for the West Coast one, just about a week and a half away. I will be there. I'm very, very excited for probably the last Warped Tour ever. And I had to ask Frank, yes, that question at the end, if My Chemical Romance will be getting back together, doing something, and he keeps his cards pretty close to his chest. But I'm going to say, you never know. It could happen. I think it's still possible. Not that I want to see Frank get shot at all in the back of the head or in the face. Next week, I will be back with another brand new episode. Make sure that you're subscribed on whatever you listen to this thing on, whether it's an Android or an iPhone or a computer or anything at all. Just make sure you hit that button. And if you like this, go back, listen to some other episodes, and tell a friend, tell a loved one, let's keep this thing going. Check out the All Access Club. Again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Okay, well, I'll leave you with the tune. Frank is prolific. Lots of music and lots of great tunes. Make sure you check out his new record, Barriers. But I'm going to play my personal favorite. Here is Oceans on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. I'll see you next time.